This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Living Free. Thanks to Resonant Frequency Radio. Yeah, and welcome to Living Free, a one-hour show in which we normally would highlight one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling, and food addictions. And our guests would normally share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on the AM dial, or 3CR on digital radio, or maybe even live streaming on 3cr.org.au. Today, you have a team of us. Everyone, actually. Missing one person, Zakia, but welcome to Bill and to Anne and to Mitch.
Hi, Michael.
G'day.
Hi.
Excellent to have us all together in the studio.
And Zakia's here in spirit.
She's definitely here in spirit.
And tell everyone that Zakia climbs Mount Everest.
You do tell everyone that she climbs.
Just quietly.
Zakia, who was one of our team members on Living Free, said she was going to climb Mount Everest. And I thought, oh, she's so... got so much energy, I wonder if she'll really do it. And she really did it. She's climbed first Afghan woman to climb Mount Everest.
Sensational.
For that reason alone, you should donate to this show.
Not a bad effort, really, Zakia.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll claim her as our own.
Yes.
In a very sort of, we'll take her. Mm-hmm. So welcome. Before we start the show, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present, and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Before we start, we'd like to remind you that Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence, so please practice self-care about yourself and others. Whilst listening, I'm hoping today we probably won't be talking about that stuff. I can't imagine, unless you guys are planning on talking about it, it's probably not going to come up.
No,
let's just say.
So could this come up in one of the clips that we might play.
Maybe we'll see how we go. So yeah, the premise of the show is really that we highlight the stories of people who have hit a bottom and come to a stage in their life through behaviours beyond their control, and then the recovery stories that come out of that. And what it looked like when they started and before they started, what it looked like through their lives and as their life spiraled. And actually the hope that came from them sitting on the other side of the desk, having a chat to us about what it looks like now. And we're going to play a few clips throughout the show. But what we are going to be doing is asking you for money to keep the show going. 3CR is funded by the donations by the listeners.
Yeah, 3CR is a not-for-profit organisation. Our voice is independent, and we resist the influence of government and corporate agendas too.
Cool.
And can I add to that, actually?
please do.
That I was reflecting on the way in, listening to the book show, actually, that there's so much voluntary work is going into this. So we're all volunteers. And it takes a bit of preparation to put the show on every week. The guests that come in are volunteers, obviously. They're not getting paid. And often they're coming in a long way from another place or Zooming in or something. Many of the people that will be answering the phone are volunteers. And the whole thing's a community. So all of those volunteers plus all you people that are listening, which I presume you're doing on a voluntary basis too, are all part of that
community. Court ordered.
Could be court orders. And even the paid staff here, I reckon, are doing voluntary work because they're often here after hours. So that's what you're supporting if you're supporting 3CR. And it's probably good to think of yourself as part of that community as a listener, because without the listener, we don't have a show.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, we're going to listen to some clips today, and shared experience saves lives. I just want to give a shout out to the guests that have been on this year and whilst the show has been running since the 90s, Bill, is that?
Late 90s, as far as I know.
Yep. There we go, late 90s. It's a very vulnerable thing that the guests come in and do. So we're going to hear some clips today, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want to say hello, Bill?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Good to be back. It's my 10th year. I think it's my 9th radiothon. So, yeah. But to add to what Anne was saying, that your donation represents a vote of thanks to all the unpaid efforts of these dedicated programmers and staff and everybody who's helping the station stay on air and provide a resource for people. Like, you know, we've got over 400 podcasts available of our weekly shows, and they're a shared resource that people can access anytime for free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, don't have to subscribe to anything.
Mm, yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing, actually, when you put it that way.
Yeah.
I'd like to, the thing at the end of the show I'd like is that everybody knows the phone number for the radio station. And so I would like them to at the end of the station, because I've said it so many times. And so we'd love you to donate to this particular show or to 3CR in general. And you can call the station on 94198377 and leave a donation. They're all tax deductible, anything above $2. We've been set a budget. I have blamed the listeners over the past few weeks for the budget that we've been set, and in the same time thanking them for getting us so far over the target last year that we've had more than a 50% increase of the budget for this year. We're on our way, and we opened the GoFundMe page for it a week or two ago, and we would like to thank some of the people who had already donated. So, Mitch, you got some names there of some people who have already donated to the show?
Yeah, for sure. And the first donation is actually nameless. It is anonymous with a $500 donation from Surrey Hills. Lucy with a $20 donation. Rose from Clifton Hill as well. Thank you for your donation. Another $41 donation. And Kay from Barwon North.
Wonderful. Thank you. So thank you to those people who have already contributed. We would love you to call the station on 94198377, or you can go onto the website at 3cr.org.au and follow the prompts there.
Or walk in off the street, 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, and very welcoming welcome you will get.
You will. There's someone will be at reception, and they'll be. We have a strict policy of taking your money. Yes. So there's not anybody who's standing in the building today who's allowed to say no.
That's right.
And so you just walk up to anybody and tell them you want to give money, and they will be happy to direct you to where it needs to happen.
Works for everyone.
Yeah. Yep. So we might start with just playing some, I have no idea where we're going with this, because I'm a bit lost with what's going to come up first. You may hear a story from the end where the person's talking about how good it is now, and you may hear something about what it looked like to start with, but I'll just push one and we'll see what happens.
Being an NA then sort of comes with a responsibility to help others. So how's that work in your life?
Early days, I've got to be really honest. I thought I was helping others, but I wasn't. Very selfish individual. By nature, I am selfish.
Yep.
It's only recently where I've really understood the meaning of being useful and being of service and showing up for others. And that's been a game changer as well. Because I spend a lot of my recovery in my own head and telling my first sponsor that I was helping others and getting out there and making phone calls. But really, I was sitting on my bed in a dark room vaping, which I don't vape anymore. But
yep.
So to actually genuinely get off my backside and get to meetings and talk to newcomers, make phone calls. I've just started sponsoring a couple of women, just thinking of other people and not myself. It's really shifted my recovery for the better.
Welcome, Mark. It's great that you could join me in the studio today.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Cool. And that's really good. So we like to start the show by asking our guests to tell us a little bit about their upbringing or their childhood. So what was it like to grow up as Mark?
Okay. I grew up in the late 60s, early 70s in Belfast in the north of Ireland. Probably not, at that time, I was just a kid. On the street, didn't know what was really going on around me. And by the time I got to, a little bit older, realised that, there was a thing euphemistically, as we call it, the Troubles, going on in the north, whereas basically one side of the community was shooting and murdering the other side of the community and vice versa. But I didn't know anything else, so it was just normal, we're here to talk about alcoholism, and I suppose I had my first drink at 9, 8, something like that, but really didn't didn't start drinking on a regular basis until I was 14, when I got a job in a bar.
At 14?
Well, you could then.
Whoops. I didn't told you I didn't know any where it was going to go.
We're back.
I've got this stuff loaded on there, and I'm looking at it going,
that's real.
Whoops.
Doesn't matter where it goes.
That's right. It's radio.
It was, and so we heard the back end of Lucy's story, and then the introduction to Lucy's story. Yeah. Welcome to Lucy after she'd already told us that life got better.
Yeah.
And some of the follow-ons from those things, I'm not here to tell her story, but I know that coming on the radio program changed her recovery, and that afterwards she's now going and carrying the message into the prisons and into the women's prison at Dame Phyllis Frost on a weekend and doing some stuff that actually came out of the confidence she got from being on this program and being and sharing her stuff with two people she didn't know. I personally was so nervous about the fact that she was coming in and I wasn't there because it's all about me. And she had such a great experience of talking to Mitch and to Bill that she, with that confidence she left from the show, she's now going and doing and carrying a message of hope to the next people along.
That's amazing. And obviously recovery is dynamic and there are ups and downs. And so maybe it's fitting that we started with, you know, how life was going at the end of her recovery or after she recovered. So
One of the things when I first started that I took over from Jude, who'd been doing it for 5 or 6 years, I think. And what she told me when I started was that after the show, it was a good idea to have coffee with the people who'd come on the show, the guests, to talk them down, because they just get this high from coming on and sharing their story to the general public. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge thing people are doing.
And then maybe a bit of coffee, the caffeine, that keeps that going.
their drug of no choice now.
Yeah, it's something.
Well, it was really the talk afterwards, just to sort of talk it out and just sort of talk about the benefit and the good feeling and what it's like to share your story and know that it's helping someone else understand what the problem is.
Yep.
Because, you know, particularly alcoholism, you don't understand what the problem is. You think somebody's drinking because they want to hurt you and make your life difficult, when really they're drinking because they can't cope. You know, they're using it self-medication, and the self-medication becomes the problem.
Mm.
But it becomes someone else's problem as well.
Yeah, and holding on to that sometimes as well, I feel like can get in the way of reconnecting with that person. It obviously depends on your relationship, but yeah, when you look at it from that perspective, it can make it more accessible.
Yeah, it's that when I listen to the speakers, the thing I enjoy about the program is that you can question them about their story. And so as a member of a 12-step fellowship, as I am, I'm used to standing in front of or sitting down in front of other people, and I tell it as I see it.
Yeah.
And
no questions.
No
asked.
Questions asked. No one gets to call me on my stuff. And actually here, I've had experience with people said I drank for the effect, and then I go, but did you really get the effect?
Mm-hmm.
At the end, they go, actually, no. But that is their story, because you get used to telling your story over and over and over again, and it just gets a bit rote. But the opportunity to actually ask people how they're, is it real?
Yeah.
Was it real now?
Yeah.
Let's read out some stuff.
So you've got to understand at 3CR, we're a bit different, and 3CR has no playlists. We don't have focus groups to figure out what to tell you. And we don't do any market research. We just listen to the public. So our program is created by real people, people like us, people who are passionate about the programs they make and the communities they belong to. And that's us as well. So we're involved with recovery groups, deeply involved, and we love it. And, you know, we'd like to share the fact that there is hope if you've got a drinking, drug, food, or whatever problem, there's people out there that can help you, and these self-help groups, you know, provide a benefit to the whole community through helping you, recover. So, yeah.
Yeah, gambling as well.
Yeah, gambling, relationships.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I guess it's about behaviours that are beyond our control, and there might be toxic relationships. It could be anything that, you know, the obsession of the mind is the thing that I can't control the way I behave based on the way that I'm thinking. It's that's been...
I can't control my first thought, yeah.
Absolutely, and then I'm acting it out and listening to, you know, I really enjoy listening to the Al-Anons come into the studio, the people that are suffering from other people's addictions and on how they're going to change their lives to live with people whose behaviours are affecting them. Yeah.
Can I just say, actually, they're not suffering from other people's addictions. They're suffering from exactly the same mind problem that the addict's suffering from, and that's obsession, obsession with the alcoholic, compulsion to think about the alcoholic, their trying to control things, addiction to trying to manage everything, and also having their own shortcomings amplified in the same way that being an addict amplifies shortcomings that are already there, like selfishness or whatever.
Yeah.
No, thanks. I'm happy to be corrected.
Yeah, so have you noticed that in some of the interviews that as being a pattern of someone talking about their own experiences with...
In Al-Anon?
Yes, in Al-Anon.
When you listen to someone talking and they're not mentioning their addiction, you wouldn't be able to tell whether it was an Al-Anon member speaking or an alcoholic or an overeater.
Right.
Because it's the same kind obsession of thinking. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My experience is I train the people around me to behave in a particular way, which then puts them outside their own moral code. And then so they end up acting in a way that feels uncomfortable for them, and they can't change me to change the way that they feel.
Yeah.
And so they need to do something for themselves.
Yeah, it's not sustainable.
No, so we might listen to some of.
Well, what if we ask for some donations?
Let's ask for some donations,
because we haven't had anybody walk through the door saying we've got a donation.
We're waiting.
So if you've learned anything from what we've just said,
please
send a little bit of money.
So phone number.
Yep, 9419 8377, or go online at 3cr.org.au and donate.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Number two, we've got someone here who's, I think her name's Brenda. She's describing where it took her being involved with an alcoholic, and you can hear that it took her to a place of, you talked about being outside your moral, your own moral code. It took her to a place of anger and desperation. So let's hear from Brenda.
I was affected by the disease, that's for sure. I didn't know it was a disease. I thought my husband had a personality disorder with a heavy drinking problem. Well, because he was an architect, a professional man, could move in any company, could take over a room when he came in. He was very much out there. And it couldn't be an alcoholic. Even though I had an uncle and aunt that were alcoholics, I just didn't see him. I was in denial, perhaps. And I did fall prey to the illusion of control, thinking I could control him by being totally subservient. I even bought the alcohol for him. I didn't do any of those other things. I hear a lot of people say, tip it out, dilute it, hide the bottles. I bought the alcohol. But I knew by the... Well, I left him twice in the marriage because of his behaviour. But I knew after the second time I left him that I was walking on eggshells, as we call it, walking on eggshells. So I'd taken the position from day one of our marriage to not argue with him, because my mother's only advice to me was, don't argue with a drunk. You may as well just argue with a bottle. But in that process, what I did was I sucked in all the resentment, all the things that I wanted to say and was too scared to say, because I hated anger. I never grew up with parents that were, I never saw my parents argue. I didn't know how to cope with a man that wanted to argue. So I would shut up, suck it in, but that's what built up on that day that I told you about. The resentment built up to the point where I just burst. I was like a dam bursting. Yeah, admitting that powerlessness, that's what I did that day, that surrender. I just remember my whole body just collapsing. God help me, I don't know what to do. And in that moment I accepted, we've got the three A's. Awareness, I became aware that I was in trouble. And he probably was too, because I had the knife. I can still see the knife in the 1970s scabbard, the stay sharp, black handle, sitting on the bench, very vivid. If he tries to stop me, that's going to go through him. Oh, my God. But thank goodness God was there to stop me. So I knew, I had the awareness, the acceptance. I accepted. I had no more aces up my nose. I never had any aces anyway. The illusion of the aces, the control, God. There was nothing more I could do, acceptance, action, get out. That were the three steps I worked because I said that prayer. And through that, I could not believe the sense of relief and release I had and the fearlessness that came into me because I just said that simple prayer and handed my will and my life over to a power beyond my comprehension. I wasn't a religious person. I went to Sunday school a few times as a kid and that was it. I was not a religious person. I did not have a punishing God in my understanding of a higher power. To me, it was just a loving God that wanted me to be safe and my babies as well. And so I actually gained personal power and freedom in that time to do what I needed to do. It only lasted for 2 hours. I collapsed in a heap on a phone box at the end of the Gold Coast and rang friends after my brain literally had to come back into my body. I was in slow motion. As I connected, the brain connected, I had to kind of work through this fog of where the hell am I? What have I done? Who do I know here?
Make your donation during our annual Radiothon and help us celebrate 50 years on air.
Donate to the 3CR Radiothon fundraiser this June.
To donate, call 0394198377 or go online at 3cr.org.au.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
And we're back. So it was it? I'll smash the microphone there because that's what I do. So, so Brenda just shared her experience of actually, I love the way that she used the word God and because it's scary and because it scares people away.
Let's talk about that. That's always my biggest worry as a presenter on this show. Let's talk about that.
What worries you about that, Anne?
What worries me about that is it makes us sound religious. And I know that there's a lot of people that think it's a religious program, but I've got to tell you, I've got no opinion whatsoever on whether I'm not an atheist I'm an atheist scientifically in the sense that I've got no interest in whether there's a God like the one in the Bible. It's not of any interest to me whatsoever. But I have got a very robust concept of universal intelligence, and I actually call it God. Yep. And I write in a journal every day and I talk about God in that journal. And I think when my kids read this after I'm dead, they're going to think I had no idea my mother was religious. But I'm actually not religious. But I do understand now what religious people are talking about because I've had experiences of the freedom that comes from surrender.
So that universal intelligence you were talking about, like you feel like you could open up about that to your children and you could have that conversation, or that's something that is better articulated written?
They probably know that I've probably told them that I've got that idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably have openly talked about that. Yeah,
I think the big thing about a concept of a higher power is that it's not me. It's, you know, coming into recovery, there was this concept that I knew everything and if I couldn't solve it, it couldn't be solved. And you come to a recovery program and says, there's hope, it doesn't depend on you. Mm. And you go, oh, my God.
But then you have to have something to replace it with. So what do we replace it with?
It's just the world. Like the world just operates. The world operates without me. I can die tomorrow and the world will not change.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
The world does not depend on me. And this idea that things align, you know, that God aligns you and finds you a car parking spot and all sorts of stuff, you know, is really a diversion from the fact is it's not me. I'm not in control. I just need to live and not try to control.
I'm sitting here nodding my head like I'm in a meeting, and it's not a visual a format.
Just for the listeners.
Yeah, just for the listeners. But that's the whole process is that I need to be shown that my self-sufficiency hasn't worked, that based on what I've tried, because my experience of trying to do things my way is that when it doesn't work, I do it harder. And harder and harder, and actually it doesn't need to be done harder, it needs to be done different.
Softer.
And I don't know how to do things differently, and so left to myself, I don't have a way to do that. If I could have got sober through self-help books, I would have. And if I could have done it through psychology, and this is a place, AA turned out to be a place of last resort, and so with nowhere else to go, I throw my hands up and go, show me something different. And AA doesn't have a God. AA just shows me the need for some sort of power that's greater than me.
Yeah.
And wherever you choose to find it. And that's what it's all about, is trying to find that where I might get some power for my life. Because I made a decision I wanted to live. and I just had no idea how I was going to do that. And they're the stories I hear when I come into the show. Everybody's got there and gone, I've tried everything. I've tried everything and nothing worked, but it's all been based on me.
Yeah, that's right. And like, you know, speaking on trying everything within yourself, I've heard the phrase terminal uniqueness come up a lot in some of the shows that I've done. And that concept of my story is so unique to me that there isn't the help and recovery resources out there that is going to be applicable to me. And I think also in terms of a higher power and, you know, looking outside of yourself for that help, we had an interview, or we did an interview with someone, and their higher power was Freddie Mercury.
I know that young lady.
Yeah. And, you know, that struck me when I heard that, because it was something of, oh, okay, this is something that just means a lot to you. It's something that you understand, and it's something that you can kind of channel those emotional resources into. And yeah, that kind of clicked when I heard that. I thought it was interesting.
Can I make a point too? I used to think that Living Free sat a little bit uneasily in 3CR, because 3CR's a radical radio station, and I thought, well, what's radical about the Living Free show? But what you just talked about there is a very radical idea in a world of rationality that goes push, 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 force, 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 get what you want, get what your family wants, all of that.
Make money, grind, yeah.
All of that, yeah. And in fact, it's a very radical idea to let go of all that. The idea of surrender, the idea of sort of walking freely, that's why it's Living Free, walking freely through the world without a lot of the baloney that we all carry with us. And that's as radical as anything you'll hear on 3CR.
Yeah.
And speaking of 3CR, if you're listening and you'd, you know, like to make a donation, you should support the station that supports local voices. So you hear local and act local, and you can do that through becoming a donor and supporting your local community. So the number again to donate, 03-9419-8377.
Yep, and 3CR is a knowledge resource for all kinds of underrepresented people and causes. So support the station, support this program that supports diversity and inclusion. Like, I can't think. I was talking to someone else recently about the diversity that sits in a 12-step fellowship. Like, I wouldn't have drunk with most of the people I have drank, like that I sit in a room with. I guess they go, because like, if you in the end, if you weren't sitting in my car and you weren't sitting in my garage, you weren't drinking with me. But the fact is that, you know, most of this collection of people from completely different backgrounds, of different sort of work or lifestyle,
politics.
Or, you know, the show really highlights that, is the fact that it's just, you can come from anywhere to have this problem, and it's so diverse I love being here at 3CR because it mirrors that. The fact that you've got all these different opinions and voices, and my experience is that I don't agree with all the opinions that I hear on the radio station, but I love the passion of the fact that the people have got the opinions, and I'm happy to ride the wave of the passion and towards the thing that I'm passionate about.
That's a cool analogy, to ride the wave of the passion.
Oh, absolutely. The vibe in the studio, in the actual radio station, is amazing. I walk in and when I come into the place, and I just feel it.
Yep.
And I feel exactly the same sort of thing when I go to a buzzing 12-step fellowship meeting, where the people are all buzzing about the fact that they're happy, their lives are happening. They might not be happy, it might not be going the way they want it to, but there's definitely a passion for life, and that's here.
And can I say also, diversity in itself is a wonderful, wonderful thing. In the way the world's going, there's a bit of an appetite against that in politics. So I like how you've made that parallel between the wonderful diversity of this station and the tolerance and acceptance of everyone in this station. And it's very similar to what you get in the 12-step meetings.
Yep.
Okay. So it's coming up to tax time. All donations over $2 are tax deductible. Nuclear submarines or 3CR. Where would you rather put your money? I'd put your money into 3CR.
Yeah. But not AI.
Yeah, not AI. And put, yeah, and donate, and if you could donate and for this show. We have a budget. We have a budget to achieve this year, and last year it was, as I said earlier, it's $2,500 last year, and this year it's
$4,000.
Like, is, you know, and for the amount of people that are listening, that's really, you know, $20 to $50 each, and that would be wonderful. and we will get there. You know, I'm sure we'll get there with your help. And so if you'd like to ring the station on 94198377 or go to the website at 3cr.org.au, we might play another clip from Anne, and you want to tee something up? And
well, this is interesting. It's talking about diversity and the kind of things we can get addicted to. So this is Carmen talking about addiction to food. So a lot of people use food to dull down feelings that they can't manage or don't enjoy having. So here's Carmen.
I stuffed my face full with an amount of calories. If you would count it, we probably would talk about 5,000 calories in one day. A huge amount of calories. And I felt so uncomfortable, full, just stuffed myself and my feelings. Mm. And now I realize that I literally just, I try to numb myself down. And first in my early childhood, teenage years with cigarettes and smoking like a chimney helped to not feel myself. Mm-hmm. And then food became more and more and more important to actually have this numbing feeling. And then I got pregnant and I gained a tremendous amount of weight. For the very first time, I was always, I was never overweight I had always sort of a healthy weight, but it was based on extreme restriction and then binging mm-hmm. on the weekend. And so when I got pregnant and I gained 25 kilos with my first child, and I had to lose it obviously afterwards because in my head, and that's another such a bad thing, I had such an urge to stay slim because my mother talked down on overweight people in a really, really bad way. And she told me as well, there was a story that my auntie was always quite overweight, and she told me that her husband most likely will cheat on her because who wants such an overweight person? And that story, I got that told quite frequently. So that stuck with me. And she looked down on to overweight people. And she always was on some sort of diet. So I saw that relationship to food and just took it on me. And so when I got pregnant and that tremendous amount of weight, it didn't fall off me. Yeah, I delivered that child and 3.5 kilos, that was my child. And this is how much I lost. And I thought, really? Now I have to get myself onto the diet. And this is what I did quite quickly afterwards because I was obsessed with my weight. And then my journey with food really started. And then the obsession took over.
Oh, that was quick. It was much quicker than I thought it was going to be quick.
Can I just do a little shout out to OA before we move on?
Yeah, do that.
Because OA was, they sent some great...
Do you want to say
what OA is? Oh, I do, actually. Good point. OA, Overeaters Anonymous. There's also Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, and they're not necessarily all people that feel that they're overweight. They're just people that know that they've got an addiction or a compulsion around food. I just want to say thank you to OA for all the great speakers they sent us because it's been too much for them. I think they don't want to, they're finding it hard to keep getting people to send. So just thank you for the people that have come on from OA, and just to let everyone know that you can go to the podcasts and listen to many OA and Food Addicts in Recovery people. There.
Yeah, and also, Anne, on our website, the Living Free webpage, there's a link to a PDF, and it's got all the podcasts in it, ordered by the recovery group, and so you can go back and listen to it. Just click on the links, and you know, 420 available there.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I got to say that it's prescribed listening for my sponsees. So, not that everything's suggested, there's no rules, but. So we're going to we'd like to thank some of the people who have donated. So Mitch, if you want to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'd like to thank Don for a generous donation, Ken from Clifton Hill, Andrew, Heather from Essendon, Jacqueline from Brooklyn, New York, I think it says here. So that's pretty cool, the Big Apple. And we had Mark with a generous donation as well. So thank you to you guys.
Cool. because your support has kept us on the air since 1976, so kept alive by 50 years of listener support. Join the legacy. We would love to get alive. We were just joking off air about the fact that we haven't received a phone call yet to somebody to donate online. But I know that a lot of the people that listen to the show listen to the podcast afterwards, and we'll be putting together a podcast for this particular one to remind them to actually donate even in the week afterwards. But if we'd love to get a live donation, so please be the one, be unique,
be radical,
be you know different.
So, we'll read your name out as soon as we get it.
As soon as we get it.
So that's a big deal.
It's all about the pride.
Yeah.
Do you want to share some of your experiences for this year, you know, some of your other stuff that you've been doing this year?
Well, I've actually had the privilege of doing an educational internship with Turning Point in Richmond. And, you know, I've been able to check out different AOD resources in the AOD sector in Melbourne.
AOD?
AOD is alcohol and other drugs. So stuff like the medically supervised injecting room in Richmond, the pill testing center in Fitzroy, which is quite cool, detoxing centers. Yeah, all kinds of different resources. So I didn't actually realize the overlap between kind of the mental health sector and alcohol and other drugs and how they intersect constantly and what kind of resources are actually out there for that kind of thing. So obviously the budget was just delivered recently. Stuff like the detoxing center in Fitzroy, unfortunately, it was closed down. But CoHealth, which offers some needle syringe services for people, just harm reduction information, that kind of thing, they received some more money and they're open for another year. So it was pretty eye-opening. That's been what's going on for the last couple of months for me.
And you we were talking beforehand and you talked about how impressed you were by the dedication of people at work in these centres.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for instance, the medically supervised injecting room, a very useful resource to people in the community and has been for a fair few years. There are people there that have been working there for years. I said to you that I feel like to be in that position and to offer and operate the services there, but also to connect with the people that actually are there and to learn a little bit about their story. And these are people that you're seeing off and on for an extended period of time. And you know, people that might be able to access those services after they've put their kids to bed and, you know, everything's organized in their life and they're able to, you know, access whatever care that they need. There's a lot of passion, basically, in the people that operate some of these services. So that was pretty inspirational and pretty eye-opening. And I think it also speaks to Bill and the people that have been running Living Free for years as well, and some of the listeners that have been listening for a long time. Basically, to keep Living Free going, you can see the difference that it makes in people's lives, and I think that can go a long way.
My experience with those people is that no one's doing it for the money. Mm. Like no one's showing up and working at these places for the money, because the stories you see, like I had a sponsee who had somebody die on their shift in a detox rehab recently on an overnight shift, and the thing that he had to face up to was really big, but he's not doing it there for the money. That it is a vocational type thing, even though you're getting paid, and I get that, but it's definitely you're doing it for the with love. Do peer support and other things in those centres is that's what life's all about.
And that comes back to Living Free, to 3CR as well, and the volunteers that make up the station here.
True, there's so much of the work in society is done by volunteers out of love. It's a good opportunity if you want to ring in and reward some of them.
That's right. By donating to 3CR, you not only support the station, but you also become part of our community that has kept 3CR on the air for 50 years. The 3CR family. Go on.
Yeah. And did you know that all 3CR donors receive the best gift? The joy of giving to the community.
Uh-huh. You'll feel really good.
How good is that?
You will feel so good.
I'll take that feel good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to sort of go back to AA was the first 12-step group, and as part of that, they wrote what's called the big book, because thick paper was cheaper, so they printed on thick paper and got a big book. And part of the Bill story in that, Bill W., was about people who get into recovery. It's like being in a lifeboat, and the only difference between, you know, like the Titanic sinking and people in the lifeboat is that everybody gets thrown together in a lifeboat, but in a normal recovery sort of thing, people sort of hop out of a lifeboat and go on with their lives and never come back. But in recovery from alcohol, drugs and all the other addictions, people actually come back to help each other to get over the experience and to, you know, to make a difference. And I think that's the big difference, that it's all this mishmash of people sort of thrown together, and by doing that, they help each other recover. Yeah.
Yeah, the common peril brought them together.
Yeah.
But it isn't that the language that's used says that it's not enough to bind them, and because the thing that binds them is the common solution, and the fact that that they all agree on a solution that has worked, and so they go their separate ways, but then come back because of the common solution, because the problem wasn't enough to hold them together. It's not they're not sitting around in a trauma class, or they're not sitting around in self-help groups. What the fact is that there is a solution on offer, and it's the solution that binds us. And that's why you can come from any background that you like or not like. You know, if you come from any background, and when you get there, and the fact is that, you know, I'll give a story. And this is a Christian story. So it's Pentecost at the moment in Christian religion. It's 50 days after the rise of Christ, and the miracle of that is that the 12 apostles got together and they spoke in tongues. And they spoke and into a large horde of people. They spoke, these Galileans spoke, and all the people in the room could understand, no matter where they came from. And the miracle, as I sat there and listening to other people talk about this, is that the 12 people spoke different languages. But the miracle I saw is that the large horde understood the language that they got to receive the message, no matter how it was carried.
Right.
And I saw it completely differently, because I see that every time I go and sit in a 12-step fellowship meeting. It doesn't matter who gets up and says the thing. If they're speaking the same language, the message is carried no matter who's hearing it. And the miracle isn't about who's speaking it. The miracle is the fact that everybody can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works for me, is that I hear this message of hope, no matter who's saying it.
Mm.
And that's astounding, because I'm really good at tuning people out. thank you. If you'd like to donate, we'd love to have a donation from you on 94198377. We might play another
Chris.
Chris, yeah, I'll play Chris.
It's like my that wife came back and stayed. So we've been together 39 years now, married 37. Those kids have grown up. That one-year-old boy is now 36.
Mm.
Daughter's 40, and they've had their struggles, but that's okay. Everyone has struggles, and life today, you know, AA has allowed me to.
Whoops, edited really cool, like just before the show started. We went, like, the way I put the bits and pieces together was too long.
It's on the fly,
and it was on the fly. You were asking what the big book was. Oh, sorry, you asked what AOD is, and I know that part of my experience of doing the show is that I speak to people who speak. They speak AA, and language, and they say, "Oh yeah," and I had a blackout, and I go, "Tell them what a blackout is." and it's like most people don't drink to blackout, so they have no understanding that my body keeps going, although my brain stopped, and I have no idea of what I'm doing because I have to explain and they say, I do service, and you go, explain what service is, and being a translator in the show of what the language that you, because you learn to speak a different language when you're hanging out with these people who speak the same language.
Yeah, that was the other cool thing about my internship, was the acronyms and the code words and learning about what they all mean and stuff. Well, I actually also wanted to go back to the lifeboat that you mentioned before, Bill, and kind of touch on how that's the beauty of the show for me, is that because recovery is ongoing, we touch base with people and they come back on the show and they're return guests, and we can catch up with them and find out how their life has been since the last time that we spoke to them. Yeah, recovery is dynamic, like I mentioned before. It's a daily thing for a lot of people, day by day. And yeah, it's been really fascinating, engaging, and fulfilling listening to how people's recovery journeys can change over time.
And can I say, if you are listening today and you are in recovery, we would love to get your donation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'd love to have you on the show if you want to contact us.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
That too.
Yeah, send in your money and also say you'd like to come on the show.
Actually, we've received calls during the year from people who are reaching out, and I know I've returned a couple of calls to people, and you know, so shout out to Michael in Thornbury.
Michael, hi.
He's a regular contact us, and shout out to I'd like to thank the guests. You know, that I have no experience of gambling, but I really enjoyed listening to other people's stuff because the language is so similar. Like they get on, and I go, oh, that, like I would never think to think about gambling as getting on.
Getting on the gear.
Yeah, getting on. Yeah. But listening to the recovery stories of people who I have nothing in common with has been completely eye-opening because my head goes to, I could have done that. Or that acting against their will is a... And I had the same, you know, I really appreciate the people that came on as representatives of Narcotics Anonymous this year. You know, that we had two or three that had their own story of recovery in a different fellowship to myself again, different ways of doing it.
Yeah. I'd also like to say thanks to some of the donors who've been donors for years for us. One is Ken. Ken's a friend of mine, great support. Heather, another great friend of mine, been in the program for some time. Lots of help, lots of encouragement. Susan, special.
Great friend request. Of yours, Bill.
Great friend of mine. And Jackie. Thanks, Jackie. It's great. So also people who come on the show and donate. On the way out the door.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's terrific. It really shows support and encourages us to keep on for another 10 years.
Yep.
Right on.
Maybe that's why we shouldn't talk them down.
Yeah.
We shouldn't talk them down until after they've donated.
Yeah,
take advantage of the fact that they're on a high and they're ripe, ripe for the taking. So
can I do a shout out to just Smart Recovery? Mm-hmm. I haven't got any clips of them, but they are alternative to the 12-step groups, and they're based on CBT, which is what, Mitch?
Cognitive Behavioural Therapy.
Thank you. And they've got a harm minimisation approach. What is that, Mitch?
Well, that's about meeting people where they are in terms of their recovery journey and what they need. And maybe it's not abstinence, but it's reducing whatever their... addiction is, and mm-hmm. making that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a slightly different model, it's weekly meetings, or it's meetings facilitated by a facilitator, which is different from the 12-step groups. Because what happens in a 12-step group, Michael, in terms of who's running the meeting?
Oh, no one runs anything. There's no bosses in a 12-step meeting. Mm-hmm. So we're all servants. The idea is the group is the strength, and then everybody's a servant of the group. And so someone takes on a job who might be the person who sits at the front of the meeting and happens to read a script, but they're there as servants. We don't have any bosses in AA.
Yeah,
and or any 12-step group, it's all about being of service to the unity. There's a tradition. There's a set of 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's also 12 traditions, and the number one tradition is unity, and that the idea that we need to leave this place in a better than it was when we got here, or as good a shape for the people who are coming behind us. I know I've got family members that are coming. Like they may not know they're coming yet, but I know that there's a space safe for them, and it's incumbent on me to show up and that's how AA works, is that we follow some guidelines to leave it in, because it's worked since the 1930s. There's not a lot that's changed.
It's nearly 100 years old. Yeah,
it's 90 years. The book was written in 1938-39, but AA started in 1935.
Yeah.
So it was it was 90 years last year, and in Australia it was 80 years last year.
Wow.
And the way that AA was introduced to in Australia was just bizarre, and it was a bizarre thing to happen. But
why? I don't know.
Was introduced an American actress who broke her anonymity, and she was she basically it came to Australia through some others, but she came over touring to do some theatre shows and I can't think of her name, but it doesn't matter. But she was meeting people at a stage door. And the people were sitting outside the stage door, and before she went on stage, she was meeting people outside the green room, as so to be.
Yeah.
And she'd come out, and she took the time to do that. It's actually the lengths that people will go to help someone is amazing.
But I also think that speaks to the diversity of someone that you might find in a meeting. You know, started by an actress, for instance, from America, and
Yeah, like there was. I mean, it came here with a doctor, and there was some other people involved in it. But she put a public face to it because she broke her anonymity, and she spoke at the town hall, and she did a lot of stuff in Sydney and Melbourne, and said this stuff works. And it grew in Australia really, really quickly.
Yeah. Well, Smart Recovery and AA meetings, they're available to you. They're online. They're accessible if you need. And as well, Smart Recovery, it's evidence-based. Anyone from any affliction can kind of access that if they'd like. So cool. There's no higher power as well, if that's more your thing. So.
Yep.
We might play one more clip, you reckon? We've got 3-4 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do one more.
Yeah.
And we'll play. Anne's got another clip.
Oh, you want me to do one?
Yeah, do one.
Okay. This one has got a bit of adult children. And we haven't talked about this. There are a lot of people in Al-Anon who are not necessarily married to an alcoholic.
Thank God.
Or even have an active alcoholic in their life, but they were brought up by alcoholics or one alcoholic, which can be very devastating. But so we've got someone talking here, Di, who's going to talk here, and I think she references that.
That I was deeply, deeply angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you living with an alcoholic at that point? Was your husband?
Yes,
so you'd married an alcoholic?
That was the man who I had partnered with, and I realised one day when I was sitting with the baby, very unhappy, not knowing what was wrong, and an avid ABC radio listener, there was a program on the radio about alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And finally the penny dropped, and the bottom of my world fell out, because I thought, what am I going to do with this baby and what's going to become of my life? And I had the answer. It was not the answer I wanted, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I can see now that he was jealous of the attention that I was giving to the baby. He was not the focus any longer. We'd been married 13 years out of choice before we had this child. And I thought that was... have a child and things will get better. And, of course, it doesn't.
Mm.
It gets worse. He was drinking. He was complaining. He was angry with me. He was demanding. Nothing I did was right.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And when the answer came to me, it was devastating. It was the deep shame of understanding what was happening in my home. And my father had been labelled an alcoholic, even though I had never seen him drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And that shame about that, what I know now is a sickness, pervaded the whole family. And I had lived with shame and never spoke about my husband. And now here was, about my father, sorry, and here was history repeating itself. And I thought I was the only one in the world.
You said you blamed yourself. Did you feel you should have known better or something?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, because I, growing up in an atmosphere where there was no control over anything, and my mother's rages were so unpredictable, I needed to be in charge and in control. And why didn't I see that this situation before I even got married? You know, I had to have a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm. So it's worth pointing out to the audience here that an adult, being the adult child of an alcoholic, is a little bit different from the impact of it's a little bit different in some ways to being married to an alcoholic, say. And one of the things that they say in another fellowship, the Adult Children of Alcoholics Fellowship, which also practices the 12 steps, is that adult children of alcoholics judge themselves without mercy. Always remember that. And that sounds to me like the kind of thing you're talking about.
Ah, thank you. Yes, I was deeply self-excoriating.
Self-excoriating. I'm like, I'm going to look it up when I get home.
Google. Sounds abrasive.
It does. It sounds very abrasive. Okay. So thank you to everyone who's been listening to the show. Thanks to those who have donated already. Thank you. We're going to pack up and get ourselves out of here and put some music on before we go. Thank you, Mitch. Thank you. And
thank you, Michael.
Bill, for a great year, actually. I really thank you for making my year
appreciate so much Michael. Fun.
Can I just say thank you to Bill for the 10 years service and that Bill has pulled back a bit and that might be why you're not hearing him so much, but thank you very much for all the work you've done for Living Free.
Yep. My pleasure. For sure.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone. And we will finish with put some music on, and I always play John Butler.
Hightail.
Used to get high.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.